And now some important words from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation, an engagement of services to be offered, and only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Hey, Scott, how about some gold?
Gold?
You want some gold?
Sure. For free?
No, you have to sell everything you own and buy it.
No, I don't want to do that.
Okay, yeah, me neither, and I don't think anybody else should. And that's why it's part of our opening tagline. So, I tell you what.
I could sell all my gold and use the proceeds to buy gold.
Well, that sounds like something that the government would do.
Yeah.
You know what? We've got some good stuff. We're going to talk about, of course, what's going on in Europe. There's lots in the news. We're going to talk about the six ways to retire without a mortgage. We're going to talk about, and this is our final two-minute segment, how to get a pay raise. So when I get to that segment, I'll ask all of the Holland Financial employees to turn off the radio for 2 minutes. No, they work hard, so they'll have no problem there. But before we do all that, we have got to get to this.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott.
Yes, we do, and it's going to be a fast 5 minutes today. Go, Scott, go.
Friday's market was off a little bit. S&P down 6 points, Dow down 48 points. Gold was off a little bit, oil off a little bit. But most of it was driven on news out of Europe. S&P announced on Friday that they were going to downgrade France's credit rating by one notch. And also they also alluded to the idea that there were quite a few more downgrades coming, including the big ones that we worry about, Spain and Portugal. And Italy. Now, 6 months ago, that would have sent the market into an absolute tailspin. I have no question about that.
But I agree with you on that.
But Friday's market really was, you know, pretty relaxed with that news. So I think we have been talking about decoupling of the domestic market from the European market. I think that's further evidence that that is actually happening.
Sorry to interrupt, Scott, but I think it's a lot of, you know, battle fatigue. It's like if you like punch your elbow or your shoulder or your arm repeatedly, your body's going to say, okay, you know, it's like it gets numb to it. I think a lot of it is just people like, oh yeah, one more thing on Europe. Okay, it's one more thing. Until it really has a true, direct, physical impact on the United States vis-a-vis our exports or some other hard number, they're like, here we are again.
Well, everybody also was expecting France to get downgraded. So I think if we got a two-notch downgrade or a three-notch downgrade, that would have been market actionable news. But one-notch downgrade, everybody's already treating France that way. So S&P saying, oh, we're going to downgrade France. You know, S&P, the same folks who helped us out during the mortgage crisis.
They were very attentive.
Yeah, they were terrific during that. So that was big news, but not much of a reaction out of it. Also big news on Friday out of Greece. They're talking to their creditors about the so-called haircut, getting their bondholders to take less money than they owe them. Those negotiations basically collapsed.
Yeah, they're not going well at all.
They are not going well. So,
how good can it go when you say to somebody, hey, we owe you money, but you know what? We only want to pay you half. So,
yeah, and half we're going to pay you a long time from now.
But smile when I say
right.
That.
Yeah, so that's still a mess. There's a big, you know, problem there. J.P. Morgan posted profits on Friday morning. Profits met expectations. Revenue number was off. We have big, big financial services sector companies posting earnings next week, including Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, which maybe Bank of most of America, according to some news that they put out today. McDonald's extended its sponsorship of the Olympic Games. Caterpillar moved a little bit higher today after Barclays moved their price target to 128 from 115. On the economic front, two major numbers in Friday's market. Consumer sentiment moved to 74, better than expectations of 71.2. And also the trade deficit totaled $47.8 billion for the month of November, month of December, highest in 5 months.
And
excuse me, November.
Is that, yeah, November. Is that good news, bad news?
It depends on who you are.
All right. Well, let's assume you are an American investor.
Well, I think if you look behind the numbers of the trade deficit, I think one of the biggest problems in the trade deficit number is that the European economy is shrinking. So there are fewer buyers of exported goods. That's a problem. Oil prices are still somewhat elevated. We still import a lot of oil. So the fact that those prices are elevated is kind of bad news there, too. So, I mean, I think if I had to net it out, I would say I would rather see that deficit shrinking in this environment right now.
Well, I don't know. Is it ever a good thing to have a budget, I mean, a trade deficit? Because every year that means that to equalize that, they got to buy more of our debt. But we need somebody to buy it anyway. So I guess it's a nice natural thing. So it's, I guess on one hand it's good, one hand it's not so good. But it's something that I think you've hit it on the head. It's all about the dollar. And the stronger the dollar, then the cheaper oil will be to us. But on the flip side, our exports will be weakened and not a good time for our export, our competitive advantage to go down with higher our prices being higher overseas because you've got fewer buyers competing for the same number of goods.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you break that number down even further, and the trade deficit number is a little bit of a harder one to break down as far as the numbers that we get. But one of the big impacts of our imports, the reason one of our imports was up so much, was that foreign-made cars were up significantly in the month. And that tells me that the consumer is willing to spend. They have some discretionary money. They're not buying cheap cars. So I think that's good from an economic standpoint.
Well, you mentioned that the consumer sentiment number, the data suggests a stronger consumer spending outlook, which current expectations are about a 2% gain. And retail sales, did you mention that earlier too?
Not today.
Okay, retail sales, yeah, I guess it depends on what I mean by earlier. Sales were up, and 2011 was a significant improvement. And the number I read, and I'm flipping through my paper, see if I can grab it quickly, but the number I read is retail sales were $4.7 trillion.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
A lot of that was auto as well. Quite a bit of it was auto. But to give you an idea on the momentum of consumer sentiment, August of 2011, the number for consumer sentiment was 55.7. The number we just got was 74. And so that's basically 6 months. That is a very, very, very strong rally in consumer sentiment. They break that down into a couple of different places. They look at future expectations and current conditions. Current conditions are thought to be better right now, comparatively speaking, than future expectations. But, you know, a little piece at a time. It tells me people are working that want to work. It tells me that folks are looking to spend money. They're saving money. The consumer sentiment number, to me, is a good indicator because two-thirds of the economy is consumer spending.
That's right. That number I found, it was $4.7 trillion for retail sales, and that's a gain of 8% over 2010 for 2011.
Yeah, that's a solid number.
So that's good. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to analyze some of this information, and we're going to answer the question, which I know Scott's dying to answer, are stocks aligned for positive growth in 2012? We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelations inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read will find you clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Okay, Scott, break it down for us on stocks being a line for a positive 2012. A line, that's kind of a funny word. Are stocks going to make money in 2012?
Yeah, it's always interesting to do an analysis of the upcoming year, because at this time last year, nobody would have said, well, there's going to be a massive earthquake in Japan that's going to really shut down supply lines and cause the market's problems. So there's always huge unknowns out there, but you can't analyze the knowns. So if we look at the S&P 500, most of what I'm seeing from an analysis standpoint is that people are expecting the market to gain 7 to 10% on the most bullish side. There are a couple of reasons for that. We're expecting record profits. 2011, we had good, really, really good profits. 2012, we're expecting maybe a 10% increase in profits there. S&P companies have about $1 trillion in cash. They've got to put it back to work at some point. Low borrowing costs really bode well for companies. It gives them the opportunity to expand, to do some research and development. And if you just look at a strict price-to-earnings ratio, the S&P shares are pretty cheap right now. Projections based on 2012 earnings put the price-to-earnings ratio for the S&P 500 at about 11.5. Historical average is about 18.
So let me ask you the question everybody wants to ask. What are companies waiting for? They've got all this cash. They've got low interest rate environment. They have a consumer that looks like they are becoming more confident. Jobless rate has fallen at least a little bit. What are they waiting on?
I think it's Europe. I mean, there are the debt crises. That's a big, big problem. We have to get some resolution there. The strong dollar, weak euro is a problem for global companies, which the S&P 500 companies are. I think those are really the big headwinds right now. And as you and I have talked about a number of times, the more governmental restrictions we have on business growth, the harder it is for companies to want to expand and hire people and things like that. So we need to make it easy to do business.
Well, and you know, the people that on the other side of that would say, which I'm not one of them, but they would say, well, look at what China's done. China has run their economy from the central control of their government, a bureaucratic government. So what do we say to that? Or is it a reasonable question?
Well, certainly there is some room in between. I mean, I think all business people really want to know is that they're going to be able to do business in a legal and ethical way, which most people do business without the government getting in their way.
So it's certainty. It's certainty they're looking for. They're looking for people, government, before corporations are going to step up and start really plowing money into hiring new workers and new market. They spend money on marketing and people. That's what they do. And then they buy the equipment to produce whatever it is they produce or to support whatever the function is they provide.
I think not even certainty, because with certainty, there's no risk. And with no risk, there's no return.
Well, I mean certainty less in terms of the regulatory environment.
Yeah, I think less uncertainty.
We don't expect certainty as it comes to the business world, but in terms of certainty of regulation. For example, in our industry, the financial industry, if we weren't sure what the regulators were going to, they'd come in and say, well, you know, it's a pop quiz. And no, you don't need, you're not going to know. We may change the rules. We didn't tell you we changed the rules. So that uncertainty would make it very difficult for us to operate our business.
Which has been a problem at times in the past in our business.
So that's part of the challenge. Another challenge has been going on. It looks like there's a little bit of an alliance building now. And we were talking about this on the break, is Japan has fallen in line with us. And that doesn't subordinate Japan. It just means that they are agreeing that, you know what, maybe we don't need to import so much oil from Iran.
Yeah. U.S. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner has been doing an Asian tour. He didn't have quite as much luck in Japan, but he basically went to he didn't have as much luck in China, but he went to Japan and said, listen, we're trying to make sure that the Iranians don't go live with their nuclear program, and one of the ways that we're trying to do that is to not buy as much oil from them. Will you get on board? And Japan said, yeah, I mean, we need the oil because our nuclear power is down. So gradually speaking, we will go ahead and try to reduce our...
Yeah, they've got 55 refineries, and 54 of their nuclear power plants are offline for routine inspections. What horrible timing.
Yeah, it really is kind of a mess. But this is not insignificant. Japan is a very, very large importer of Iranian oil, so Iran will definitely feel it. And now, if China joined, that would...
China would make all the difference in the world, and Iran knows that, and China knows that.
Yeah, China imports 30% of Iran's oil. Japan imports somewhere between 50 and 20, so it's a pretty...
So the two could almost be 40 to 50%.
Yeah, that's meaningful.
So they'd notice that.
Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on that. So anything's nobody, again, this information doesn't mean somebody should go out and you know, go short the market on oil or go long and you know, do a triple bull direction and bet on oil. But it does warrant staying very closely attuned to what's happening here.
Yeah, and I think it also speaks well to the political clout of the United States, which at times has been in question in the last couple of years. So I think
so. We still have a friend in Japan.
Yeah, so I think that's also a good sign there.
Well, speaking of our friends, Berkshire Hathaway has got a lot of stuff going on with a lot of the companies they hold.
Yeah.
And we expect to see some earning announcements here coming up. You mentioned a couple of the financial companies, Wells Fargo, American Express, MasterCard, Visa, all Berkshire Hathaway holdings.
Yeah.
And, of course, some of the more recent additions, IBM, Intel, those are all additional investments. And right now, Berkshire Hathaway, the investment fund, is year-to-date up about 1.5% versus the S&P 500 is up about 3%.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of catching up for him to do with
which
that
is not
fund.
Uncommon for him. You know, in really raging markets, he has a tendency to underperform.
And so it tends to be a more conservative investment.
Yeah, they're definitely value-based. They're very, very classic value-based, and they are conservative. And so in short, quick moves up, they generally don't participate.
Okay, good. Well, we want to keep an eye on that and see what happens. And you know, relative to those indices, you know, I mentioned S&P's up 3% for the year. Industrial average only up 2%. So we're seeing that broader market do a little better. And then, of course, overseas, we're seeing Brazil still leading the charge at 5.5%. And Germany up almost 5%. So
yeah. Well, much like we see a flight to quality to domestic bonds, 10-year Treasury at 1.84 on Friday's trade.
We're seeing a similar movement
to
with
Germany.
The stocks.
Well, yeah, to Germany in the stock market and their bonds as well.
Well, we will see what happens. And that's all time we have for this segment. When we come back, we'll get to our primary topic for today, which is 6 ways to retire without a mortgage. Stay tuned.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 13 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN. To schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Who wants to retire still having a mortgage on their home? Nobody. But for a lot of people, that's reality. And so the question is, what steps can you take to not have a mortgage or at least accelerate paying it off in retirement? There is no crime here. There's no, gosh, if you do that, you're stupid. None of that. I don't think that's true. I think that different people's situations will call for just different things to play out. There are a lot of prudent, well-planning people that just based on how things work out in their lifetime end up still having a mortgage in retirement. I don't think that's something that anyone should feel badly about. But you obviously want to eliminate that if you can, and it depends on your situation. Some of the ways to deal with that is if your finances will permit it as you get closer to retirement. And again, I talk about that age 50 to 60 being kind of the peak earning period. And if you've got extra money that is part of your savings toward retirement, you also, if you have a higher interest rate mortgage, one of the rules of thumb I've always used is that if your mortgage rate is 4% or less, then you probably should invest with, you know, in other things that can produce more potential return, especially if you're still working toward retirement. And then if you have over 6%, then we probably should work quicker to pay off the mortgage. And then, of course, 4 to 6% gets me into that gray area where it'll depend a lot on the person's situation. So for people that have a higher interest rate mortgage, paying off the making those extra payments, you know, a couple hundred dollars a month difference can make a huge difference in terms of how long you're paying. You might be able to knock off 5 or more years from the payment period. And another technique that a lot of people use is just simply refinancing. And that's pretty obvious for a lot of people today. If you've got enough equity in your home and you can demonstrate you have the income, then with mortgage rates, especially for 30-year being below 4%, and of course for 15 years is even a little bit less than that, you can refinance, but don't use that extra money that you save to spend on something else. Let it retire your mortgage quicker. So you take out a 15-year mortgage, you might be able to go from a 30 to a 15. You still may be able to make, you might be able to make it a 10, keep the payments you had of the previous mortgage. So if your payment is, you know, $1,000 a month, the new mortgage lets you go down, even with 15 years, lets you go down to 700, keep it at 1,000. You might pay it off in 10, 12 or so years. So a very good way of lowering your mortgage. Another way to enter retirement with no mortgage, or to at least eliminate that as much as you can, is to downsize your home. For a lot of people that are getting closer to retirement, In fact, I was just talking to my wife about this the other day. I said, you know, she's like, boy, you know, it's at some point we're going to want to look at downsizing. But, you know, it's something you talk about over dinner at the dinner table when the kids are running around in the other room. And I said, you know what? When the kids are ready, they're out of the house. Well, we can take a look at that. Maybe we can downsize. Maybe we'll go live in a condo on the beach. But the point is that you look at downsizing to a smaller home can have a multiplicative, it can have a huge impact in a lot of ways that affect a lot of areas. You can reduce your insurance, your property taxes, the energy utilization. A lot of people talk about having a room that they'll shut if they aren't really in there. And I've talked to folks at FP&L and people like that. It doesn't really make a big difference because then you end up having an area of your house have to work harder with the air. And so the better solution is just to reduce the size of the home. Your maintenance is less. The cutting the yard is less. My dad always tells me, you know, someday we had a townhouse at one point, and then he ended up in a regular home with a pretty good sized yard, and he's out there mowing it himself, and he teases my mom and says, you know, we need to get a townhouse where I just bring out the lawnmower, start it, push it, what, you know, 10 feet one way, and he's done. And so, I mean, one little strip of grass, but. You know, the point is you can reduce your cost. Now, another thing that some people do, especially if they're moving to get closer to the grandkids or to other family or to their children so that they will have the support they need when they need a little extra help, you know, with their own needs as people age, they need a little help from their family. And so something that people look at is relocating closer to their family. And in doing so, maybe they move into a cheaper area. And again, not only a cheaper area in terms of spending money in general, but also looking for maybe a smaller home. Now, here's another idea that I have for you that came out of an interview I did last year with an author. Her name is Erica Manfred, and her book is He's History, You're Not, Surviving Divorce After 40. I really enjoyed talking with her when she was a guest on our show, and one of the things she talked about was for divorcees, men or women, I guess, could do this, but she was speaking primarily to women in the book, is to get a roommate. They got the home in the divorce, and also, of course, would apply for a widow, that you have the home all to yourself. It's a lot of space, and you're by yourself. So from a security standpoint, and also to generate some extra income, rent out a room. And of course, you want to be extraordinarily careful about who it is you allow to be in your home. And you've heard me talk about security concerns on previous shows. But if you find somebody that you feel comfortable with, there's some extra income. And using that income can not only help to make ends meet, like Erica talked about in her book, but also can help you accelerate making payments on that mortgage. So take advantage of that as you can. And then another option, which I think is really smart, especially as people get older, is to rent instead of own. If there's an opportunity to sell the home and maybe get some equity out of it, or at least be able to move out of it. And if you're upside down, it doesn't make sense, but be able to get out of the home and then rent. You know, let's say you're going to do an extensive amount of traveling when you retire, or you simply want to be able to lock that door in a condo or an apartment or whatever it may be and leave, or you simply want a real low maintenance type of situation. Well, then looking at renting instead of owning is a really good choice. So those are some of the tips that I think would make sense for reaching retirement without a mortgage. And so keep those in mind. And again, this is where working with a financial planner can be very helpful. You want to make sure that you know what your options are. And say, I've worked with people that were considering this and we needed to talk about it. So let's give that some thought, work with a planner, and they can help you. Now, stick around. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to get a pay raise for those of you that are out there working and looking forward to retirement. Let's look at how to make those working years count. Stay tuned.
Do you ever think about the effects inflation will have on your retirement savings? Can you remember when gas was just $1 per gallon? Or when you could buy a house for less than what most cars sell for these days? Is it possible to keep pace with inflation and protect a portion of your portfolio from stock market volatility? A registered investment advisor can show you your options. Certified financial planner David Holland and his team of fee-based investment advisors are ready to help. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 888-747-PLAN. That number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit us at www.davidholland.com.
My name is Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume. It's huge when somebody says, "That job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United.
Go to liveunitedinvolutiaflagler.org. Brought to you by the United Way and the Ad Council.
With so many financial products and services available today, do you ever wonder what the best income strategy is for your situation? Call Holland Financial to receive a free educational DVD on retirement income strategies. Certified financial planner David Holland discusses some of the income planning strategies used by retirees and baby boomers. The DVD is available free of charge, hassle, or pressure by simply calling 888-747-PLAN. Again, that's 888-747-7526.
This is your 2-minute warning.
Yes, it is. And here, very quickly, in fact, Lisa told me I have less than 2 minutes, so I'm going to talk fast. How do you get a pay raise? That's what you want to know, and that's what people that are still working need to be thinking about. Now, there is so much to this, and I'm going to give you a couple key points. I employ people. I have 16 fantastic employees at Holland Financial, and I know in working with them and being an employer what employers are looking for. So I'll give you some real quick here. There's a lot of talk out there about how do you get a pay raise and what do you do and what are the tricks? And you know what? It really doesn't require any tricks. You just need to make sure that you're making a positive contribution to the work that the employer does. And don't just talk the talk. You know, several things I could talk about. Be low maintenance. Don't add drama to your office. Don't gossip. Smile. Be positive. Don't be the person that human resources has to talk about or talk to. Don't expect management to be perfect. They're people too. And don't expect them to be perfectly fair all the time. They're going to work hard to be fair with everybody, but just make sure that you are a positive person and you give them a little extra. You know, if you want more from your employer, give them a little extra. You know, maybe now and then you end up working through lunch or you work a little bit later. Don't be the person that knocks people down getting out the door at 4:59. You know, here's something that's really important. Everybody is a salesman for the company. You're a salesperson for your company no matter what your position. And every business is in sales no matter what they do. And be understanding about how employers are compensating their people. Employee benefit cost has gone through the roof. Health insurance cost has gone up every single year that I've been in business for 15 years. So understand that there's only so much sometimes that employers can do. And last but not least, remember that a raise comes from two things: your merit, your contribution to the company, and the profitability of the company. Both have to be there. And understand that. And you do a good job, work hard, and those raises will come. Thanks for being with me today. Be sure to turn in next time.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul.
to the company store.